Eva Mae Hampton was born at the beginning of the 20th century. She grew up at a time when Kansas was still in the age of the Wild West, and her life included many adventures, including being listed in Who's Who. But the way that I know her best is as one of her grandkids. I'm Shelley Schlender. Thanks to Michael Turner, another grandkid, for recording these conversations with our grandmother on July 10th, 1979, when she was close to 80 years old. Coming up, you'll hear about when she married our grandfather, L.O. Turner. You'll hear about how they made a go of it through thick and thin, and life or death trick-or-treating with kids. This interview begins with Michael and Grandma Turner talking about Grandma's youngest child and Michael's dad, Dan, and how Dan liked to drop silverware down the heat register when he was little.
The past of Grandma Turner.
They were the L.O. Turner family.
What did he do? What was some of the things he did when he was little?
Well, he was an awful sweet baby. Really, he didn't cry much. He didn't cause much trouble at all. Dan didn't. He just kind of grew with the rest of them, you know, this rest of the family. And he just kind of grew with the rest of them when he was little. He wasn't much trouble at all.
Did he drop spoons and stuff?
Oh, sure. Oh, my, yes. Well, the first thing that he did when we built our house, why, they raised up the foundation to put in the basement. First, we put a full basement in. And then we raised up the house, that house that we was living in, kept living in it. And then the porch, they put a porch on to cover the house didn't cover. Mm-hmm. And we lived there a while. But there was a big knothole in the kitchen floor. And lo and behold, I kept missing my spoons, big spoons, and butcher knives, and spatulas and everything. Come to find out, darling Dan was going into and getting those and dropping them down. And see the men working down in the underneath? I went down to get them. They said, no, we haven't seen them. See, they put them away. Wouldn't give them to me. We haven't seen anything of them. In other words, we covered them up with dirt, but they didn't. They had them. But I never did get them because all my big butcher knives and stuff went down that hole.
What did he do on July 4th?
Oh, on July, well, that was later, but this when he was little. Oh. And then he discovered that you could put silverware in the register and it'd clink, see? And I found him he'd drop a knife, or, you know, silverware.
Uh-huh.
And he'd listen, and he'd see if it would clink. See, there was another silverware down there, and he'd hit it, and it'd clink. Then he'd wait a while, then he'd put another one down. For some reason, he really enjoyed doing that. And then Cheryl came to live with us. Evelyn was working, and Chet was in college, and Cheryl stayed with us. And he and Cheryl decided that they'd have a game of marbles. So Dan had a whole bunch of marbles, a great big sack of marbles. And they would shoot those marbles. And if they'd hit the register, see the thing was on the floor, the cold air vent. Mm-hmm. And they'd hit that cold air vent, and they'd hit that, you know, it'd make a noise when it hit that. And he and Cheryl, no telling how many marbles. You heard him ask me for his marbles?
Uh-huh.
Ha. But two-thirds of them were down that register. They ever take that furnace apart, why, there'll be marbles and silverware. No telling what else. It's just no telling. But anyway, whatever. I don't know why you got a kick out of things like that, but Dan did. He just loved it. And Cheryl, when Cheryl come, he and Cheryl were kind of pals. How much difference in age is there between Cheryl and Dan? Not too awful much difference, is it?
8 years.
He was just about 8 years old when she was born, when she came to live, to stay with us. She stayed a year. But anyway, she and the dad, they really had a good time. But and then it seemed like Betty and Lee and Edwin. Why they were let's see, Betty and Evelyn and Lee and Edwin. They were bigger, but he just kind of followed him around, and you know, he just wasn't much trouble at all. And then he finally got bored following the big ones and all. He just really got bored, and that's when Grandpa come up and saw that Dan was bored, and he didn't want him to be that way. He was sitting there, you know, with his hands, and he's, you know, bored. Just bored with life. And that's when Grandpa went out to the Dairy Queen and got that job for him. And he was going to pay for the job. And believe me, he meant it too. He went out to pay the pace when Dan come rushing in with his salary that he got for the week. Grandpa went right out there to pay Bradshaw for what he'd give Dan. He said, "No, you don't owe me a penny." He said, "That little boy is going to be a jewel out here. I use him, I want him, and he's earned every penny." He wouldn't take a cent.
How old was he when he started working for the Dairy Queen?
I don't know. I was trying to figure how old Dan was when he went out there, but he certainly... He just took one Bradshaw over. But I think Bradshaw worked Dan pretty hard. Because Dan said, he said, "Mom, I had to work awful hard out there." But, you know, they have a tendency, kids work them, overwork them, do you know what? Just like they did you in that store business. For some reason, they'll overwork a kid. I wonder what makes them do that.
I don't know.
And a kid will do it, they think they have to. And they do it. And they'll use them. Well, Bradshaw did Dan. But anyway, he stayed there. And made, put his money in the building and loan. Piled up his money for college. That's why I tell you, Mike, I don't quite understand. All of our kids, they're always looking forward to college. And every penny they could make, they saved. Of course, they never paid a penny in for... You know, board and room at home, we'd never take a penny of anything as long as they were saving their money. And boy, they saved their money. So we just never even thought about it, taking a penny of their money. But had they been spendthrifts and spent it foolish, that'd been a different story. I think if I had a child like that, I'd take the money, make them pay for board and room, and then put it away. Give it to them, you know, when they were grown. But we never did have that trouble with any of our kids, ever.
Was Dan the one that went out there with the shoe polish?
And took an empty bottle. They used to have that bottle of shoe polish. Well, it was empty. Then he put water in it.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, Betty, it seemed like, was always along. Betty and Dan, when they were little, they were pretty much pals. And Dan goes along and rung doorbells and asks them if he'd polish their shoes, you know, for a dime. And then he put that water. And they give him a dime. Oh, I tell you. He should have been a kind of one of these door knockers, really. Can't you see him going along? "Would you like to have your shoes polished? It'll only cost you 10 cents. And then when the water get down, you put more water in. Oh, I tell you. But in those days, Mike, when all the kids were home and all this stuff was going on, and the kids from the neighborhood, for some reason, they gathered over to our place. They were always over there. Cookies. I would make cookies. There was one day went by that I didn't make a batch of cookies. So I'd make first one kind, then the other, and could I make them? They were really good cookies. And so I decided one time that I'd just stick with one kind and I'd burn them out. I'd just make one kind. I never, ever did burn them out, but I did discover this. One day I saw Dan get a whole pile of cookies, and when they come home from school, see, had cookies and milk. And I saw him take a whole big handful of those cookies and walk out the door. And there was a whole bunch of little boys sitting down there on the step, and he was giving those cookies to the boys. So I think a lot of those cookies went to friends. See, they gather over to our house, don't you see? And Dan peddled cookies to them. Big heart of Dan, see? But I never, I used to think if I could just keep a few cookies in that cookie jar, just a few, but I never could. Every day. Those kids ate a batch of cookies a day. Do you believe that? Mm-hmm. But I ate them. I baked the cookies when they came home from school. And the first thing when they'd walk in the door, Mike, the first thing when they'd walk in that door, they'd say, "Mom." And I'd say, "Yeah, I'm here. I'm all right." And that's all they had to know. Everything just jived along. First thing, they'd always holler and say, "Mom, are you home?" And I contend now, they say, "What's happening? These little kids, the mamas are never home. They're working or someplace else." And boy, when you got little kids, when they come home, they want mom to be there, do you not? It's the truth, Mike. And I was always there. And we lived, you know where we lived there, 201 Southeast 3rd, there was a... The folks lived down the street, and they'd have these coffees in the morning and gather around, you know, and visit. The women would, you know, for hours. And believe me, if I got away from that house, it was to go to the store as fast as ever I could and get my groceries and get back and get to work, get to cook and stuff. And I'd just say hello and go on. Come to find out, since I moved back here, they said, "Mrs. Turner, we didn't know that you were, we thought you were a snob." Said, "We all thought you were a snob." Said, "We never realized that you were a nice person at all." And I said, "What?" Well, they said, "Remember when you'd go by down the street and we'd be talking and you'd just say hello and go on, turn your little nose up and just go tripping on?" I said, "My dears, I didn't have time to stop and talk. I had a big family and I had to get home and get busy and get cooking and everything I did, and I didn't have time to stop and visit with them. And now I do, you see." And they realize that Mrs. Turner's not a snob. I'm not a snob. I meet those very women down there, senior citizens, that they that I had the name of being a snob. And come to find out, I'm not a snob. I'm friendly with all of them. And wasn't that something? But that was the name I had.
When they was it Halloween when they went around and found that guy that they thought was dead?
Oh, Mike, that was the last straw. We took turns in the neighbors. These kids had come over to my place, you see. Well, on Halloween, the mothers would take turns going out with them Halloween. We'd never let our kids go unless they were some of the family, you know, some of the adults with them to take care of them. And so they took turns and it come my turn. And so they said, "Well, Miss Turner, it is your turn. We went every year and we think that it's your turn now to go this Halloween." And I said, "Okay, I'll go with them. Don't worry, I'll take care of them." Brother, I didn't know what I was getting into. I never realized what I was getting into. That was an experience that I'll never forget. Those kids, those boys, see, there's a bunch of boys. Boy, it seemed to me like there's mostly boys. Oh, and I'd have been all right, but there was two big ones that was about 14 in the bunch. And I said, "Now, we want to be real genteel, be careful, and go up to the door." And what started the whole thing? Why, one of the But 14-year-old boys went up and rang the doorbell just as sweet as anybody could and asked for Halloween tricks or treats, see? And this man come to the door and he said, get off my property. He says, or I'll shoot you. And he said, I'll shoot you. Believe me, I will. And he said, get off, get off. And he turned around when he got just off his property and took an apple and slung it and hit it just right in the face. He did. Hit this old guy right in the face. And he says, I'm going to have you arrested. I'm going to have you arrested. And we run for dear life. So then, and me too, I run scared to death. So anyway, then we come to a place. We had that experience. Then we come to a place and the kids went up, rang the doorbell, and nobody came. And the light was on. There was a light on the living room. And they rang again. Nobody came to the door. And they said they saw the man sitting there in the chair, in his chair in the living room. And so they come back and said, Miss Turner, there's something wrong. Said, there's a man sitting there in the living room, and he's not moving. And every time we look in there, he's not moving. He's just the same position he was. And he said, we think he's dead. I said, oh, my goodness. That would be terrible. Oh, we know he's dead. And so others went up. The party went up in there, and he said, like that. Never moved a muscle. They said, Mom, he's dead. That's what my kids said, you know, and all that. Dan said, Mom, you've got to do something. There's a dead man in there. He's dead. And so they had me so convinced that I walked up on the porch, and I'm a kid, and there he said, just like that. Yes, sir, I believe he is dead. Believe he is. See, he's ringing the doorbell, hammering on the door. Never mind. And so I said, well, the thing we'll do, this is what we'll do. We'll go around the block, and then we'll come back here. And if he's still sitting there like that, then we'll call the law, do something about it right quick. So he goes around the block, for Halloween. By the time they'd get home, they'd have great big, one of those great big Dillon sacks full of Halloween treats. Do you believe that? Full. They didn't mess around. Boy, brought back the bacon. All those kids did. Time they go to all the houses and get stuff. So we goes around the block and come back, and I walked up on the porch and looked in, and there was nobody sitting in that chair. And I said, he was putting on, scaring the kids, see, don't you see? Quite a deal at that, wasn't it? And so then we goes to another house, and a mob coming to the door where you give them everything you had rather than have to tear your house down. But anyway, this woman said, now listen, darlings. They were little demons. Listen, darlings, I don't have anything left, but if you'll come back in 30 minutes, I'll make you a plate of fudge, and I'll even put nuts in it. If you'll just be good now, be nice. You come back now in about 30 minutes, and I'll have a plate of fudge ready for you. So, all right. He goes off and starts baking other places. And imagine me going along down the street while they were banging and getting that stuff, and I want to tell you, they had sacks of it. And so finally, they watched right out of the, somebody had a watch, I don't know who it was, but somebody had a watch, and believe me, when the 30 minutes, we got to go back where she promises to make that nut fudge for us. So back we went, and she came just as sweetly out with a great big plate of fudge, and they boom, 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 hit the drop. There wasn't a bite of it left. Oh, dear. I tell you, that was the experience I'll never forget, that Halloween. I just had to go once with him, but I vowed I'd never go again. I thought, boy, if Grandpa, if Dan's dad isn't here to go, they'll just have to get somebody else. See, usually the men went, but it was me that had to go, because Grandpa was always gone on the railroad in the critical moments. And if he'd have gone along, been all right, you see. But with me, it was an awful responsibility to get those kids safely back home without being killed. Because they could have been killed awfully. That guy that was hit with that apple, I'm telling you, he was mad. He said, I'll kill you, I'll kill you. Oh, my God.
Whose trash can was it that they blew up on the 4th of July?
Oh, I don't know. But it sounded like a cannon. But that poor Mrs. Powell, I've thought since. Michael, I have thought since about Jenny Powell. I want to tell you how she ever stood it all, I'll never know. Because believe me, if somebody lived next door like we were, and I'm here myself, I don't know what I'd do. It'd be a terrible thing. I think I'd sell out.
Were they sitting on the garage? And...
Oh, and waiting. And if she'd stick her head out the back door, well, it was so bad. It was just so bad that the poor old soul. Then I thought she was a shrew. I thought, well, that old lady not loving these darling children. And I hated her myself. I said, boy, you talking to my children like that, I don't like to call them little demons and everything. And it made me mad, and I wouldn't even speak to her. But, and she'd sit and wait, and well, as they'd walk on the sidewalk, and if they'd get just for meanness, they'd put one foot over the grass, she'd be looking, get your foot off my grass! And that's the way she was. She just, you know, she was watching for trouble, waiting for it. So all year, they were enemies, all year long. And then once a year, she'd say, well, children, I'm having a wiener roast, and you're invited over to my backyard. I'm giving you a wiener roast tonight. And all these kids, well, she's giving us a wiener roast. Well, we'll go, but I bet they're day old bums, and the wieners are probably stale. But we'll go. So they all went to the wiener roast, and they come back. Well, it was a nice wiener roast, and she was real nice. Then the feud would start. Within a week, they'd start feuding again. Why did they do that? Tormenting the poor old soul till she didn't know which end her head was on. And then they said, we know why Mr. Powell went crazy. We know how. Why, who wouldn't go crazy with old Jenny Powell? And that's the way they talked to her. It was terrible.
Did they put a May basket on our porch and she'd go out there and grab it and pull it?
And then they'd pull it away. An April Fool, they'd pull stuff, you know. April Fool! April Fool! Oh, they tormented her all the time.
Was she still living there when you left?
Yeah, she was. Uh-huh. But I look back, and I can realize now that the poor old lady really was pretty tough on her, do you know it? Because it'd been bad enough with just her own kids. But see, for some reason, they gathered all there on that corner. I think it was because that corner light. There was a light there, and they'd all gather there on that corner. They always come over to our place. Well, I land the whole mess up. And then they, in the wintertime, when it would snow, why, they'd take sides, and they'd fix the fort. Now, this was serious, too. And one would get over on the other side of the street, they'd be an enemy. The enemies would be over across the street, and they'd fix a fort. And they were, boy, if they'd have had to work for a living that way, they'd have never did it. Why, they worked their little heads off, making snowballs. And come to find out, they put stones in the snowballs. See? To make them, when they hit, they hurt, don't you see? And they'd pile the snowballs up, big fort, you know, a big pile of snowballs. Then when the time had come, when the war started, well, then they'd start bombarding each other, but they never did kill each other, or, you know, or anything, but it's a wonder they didn't. But But they sure did, and Evelyn worked and did that too. Evelyn worked right out there, because I remembered that she was making those mud balls. After the snow melt, they'd make mud balls. And a lady come along down the street, and she said, "Oh, isn't that sweet to see see her making those little mud pies? I can remember when I made mud pies." I thought, "Mud pies your foot." She was making cannonballs. No wonder they all hated us around there. Why, who wouldn't? We were pests. It was a terrible thing. But they'd make those mud balls, they'd pile them up, and then they'd get sides over across the street, and they'd make a pile, and then they'd start shooting them at each other. My goodness, it was rough around there in those days. It really was.
Were there fish in that creek when Dan went down there to fish?
They claimed there was. You knew that it was the hen got loose. Somebody's hen got loose, and so the whole bunch took out for this hen. They figured she was going to lay an egg. That's what they figured, that she was looking for a place to lay an egg. So all of them watched, and all of them was looking, keeping their eye on this hen. And Lee, don't it sound like Lee? Lee saw her squat, and he just reached his hand under the egg. And when he brought it in, it was hot. She just dropped it in Lee's hand. When you think about all those crazy things, I will tell you. And then it was, and your grandpa, he expected it, just most anything. He really did, you know. And they'd pull stuff, you know, and poor old grandpa. He'd get a new car, and I want to tell you, one of them, either Edwin or Lee or Dan, would get a hold of the car keys. Jeremy took the car keys with him. So when he was gone, if I had to get groceries, I had to walk and carry him home. Many a time I've carried a big sack in each arm because he had the keys, for the simple reason he didn't want the boys to have that car, you know, running. But somewhere or other, they had managed to get a hold of his new car and wreck it. Always something. Some sort of a wreck. Always. And I think that the most outstanding one was, and then it'd come back, you know, and maybe get stuck in the mud or something, and it'd run the race.
Who was the one that had a date and had her she got stuck in the mud?
That was Lee. And he come in, we were in bed, and he come into the bedroom door, and he said, "Well, Dad," he says, "you can just call me anything you want." He said, "There's nothing too low that you can call me." See, that's how he got around, Dad, don't you see? He said, "Just call me a skunk." He said, "Call me a tramp. Call me a bum. There's nothing too hard that you can call me," he said. "I'll understand, because that's just what I am. I'm a dirty, low-down skunk. I have ruined your car." He said, "Now," and I can see Grandpa yet sitting up in bed, and he said, "Well, now, son," "son, what have you done now?" And Lee said, "Well," he said, "I got stuck on a country road, and I had to carry my girl clear from the car out there, clear to her home to keep her from getting muddy." And he was a mess, but he carried her all the way so she wouldn't get muddy from that car clear to her house. And he said, "And I'm awful tired." And Grandpa said, "But where's the car?" "Well, it's out there in that country road stuck. You can't budge it." "Oh, my," he said. "Well, we can't leave it out there, because they'll be stripped by morning. They'll take everything off of it by morning. So we'll just have to go and get it tonight." So he gets himself dressed. Grandpa did.
Instead of cussing and swearing and raising Cain, he gets himself dressed and put his hat and coat on and says, come on, son, we'll go get it. And he had to hire somebody to go out with him to get that car, to get it out of the mud, bring it home. And of course, you can imagine his lovely new car when it come in, muddy, been stuck and ruined. Then he'd trade him off and get another car. And that there for a while, that's all he was doing. He'd trade one car off and get another one, trying to have a nice car. Grandfather was. But the women boys, first Edwin, then Lee, and then Dan, he just seemed like he just couldn't keep a new car. They'd wreck every one of them, some way or other. He has three boys.
What kind of grades did Dan get? What kind of grades did Dan get?
Oh, my land, perfect. They're smart as whips.
All of them?
Oh, my, yes. Land of goodness, I should say. We never had any trouble. Those boys were tops in grades. Smart as whips. They were. They just were. For some reason, when they got ready to study, they could just cast everything out and just concentrate and study. And Edwin, too. All three of those boys were just sharpest. In fact, the teacher said, boy, they were really sharp boys, but they had very high intelligence. They did. Evelyn was intelligent. She got good grades, and she took shorthand. And she took the bookkeeping course, bookkeeping and typing and shorthand. And so the only time that I can remember that there was any worry at all about any of the kids was when she took that shorthand, she came home one night and started crying. And she said, Mom, I can't get it. It's too hard for me. She said, I just can't get it. I'm going to have to drop that subject. I just don't understand it, and I can't get it. And I sit down, and I said, well, now listen. Let's look this situation over. What's got you stumped? Well, I said, can't you get this lesson that she gave you for tomorrow? Yeah, but she said, just look, it's too hard, the whole thing. And I said, well, you're looking too far ahead. You just get tomorrow's lesson. Just get this one lesson, the very best you can, and forget about the next lesson till you get this lesson. So I sit with her, and I would read words, and then she'd write it down in shorthand. And she got that lesson and handed in her lesson. And then the next day, I said, all right, now I'll help you again. And my land, in just a short time, she was on her own. She really got to be a good shorthand. But she almost gave it up there once. But that's all I ever remember having any trouble with any of our kids in school. I just don't remember. I know one time Lee, at noon, he and these other boys down the street, well, this is one of the cutest things, I think. Dan, when he was the... Oh, he couldn't have been over probably about 10. And the two stooges that come along with him, they lived right up the street. They was three others, and they sang. And so Dan would try to sing, and they'd say, shut up, you don't know how to sing. And he'd come home crying one day. He said, Mom, they won't let me sing. And I have to walk behind them. They won't let me sing with them. So I have to walk behind and while they're singing. And I said, well, thing of it is, Dad. I said, now what seems to be the trouble? Well, he said, I just can't keep in tune with them. I just can't. Well, I said, in a case of that time, kind, well, I said, you have all different tones in music. My goodness, don't let that worry you. I said, evidently you're kind of a baritone or something. I said, now listen, the next time they start out on a song, you start singing just as loud as you can in your own voice.
And don't try to reach their voices at all. Sing it in your own voice, in your own tone. And boy, he started in, and they began to like it. And they took him in, and they had quartet then. They took Dan in, because he sang in a different tone that worked in slick. So that went on. So Christmas come. Christmas come. And every Christmas this went on. And they gather and they go and sing Christmas carols to the neighbors. Christmas carols. Until one afternoon, and this has gone on, Mike, for how many years, I just can't tell you. Because every Christmas that was there, as soon as they start putting up the Christmas decorations, the boys start singing to the people, see? The quartet. Their quartet. So, until one Christmas, I felt so ashamed. It was terrible. They were sitting in the living room, and they said, "Wasn't she a cheapskate? She'd never give us a red cent." And I thought, what did you say? I just happened to hear someone I'm saying, and we never got a red cent. Well, they said, we sang to this woman, and she never gave us a penny. She just stood there and never gave us a red cent. And I said, now how have you been singing? Well, they said, we all stand together, and we put our hand out. Silent night, holy night. All is calm. And then they put money in her hand. Oh, my land. Have you been doing this for money? Well, of course. What else? What else did you think we were doing it for? I said, you mean you've been going around to all the people and begging for money by singing Silent Night? That's the only tune they sang, Silent Night. Well, what do you think we're doing it for then? I said, boy, don't you ever do that ever again. That's the most disgraceful thing I ever heard tell of. And I tell you, they got me beat down. I was afraid to hold my head up. Those kids. Now, really, that's what they did. And I don't know how much they gathered, how much money. But that's what they did. Evidently, they'd give them a dime apiece, you know, 40 cents.
During Christmas, did they open packages before Christmas?
Oh, they always did that. Always.
They get them out and play with them?
Yeah. Wrap up broken.
Who was doing that?
Oh, first one, then the other. Those boys, they'd get something for the other, but they really wanted, you know. And then they'd get it out and play with it till they broke it. And then they'd wrap it carefully and put it back under the tree.
They'd open their gifts.
Yeah, and you could see them when they opened their gifts on Christmas morning. They didn't know what to expect. Oh, my.
They didn't know if someone had broken one of their gifts.
Oh. But on Christmas, boy, I always made every kind of candy you could think of. Homemade candy. We always splurged on Christmas. That's where they all get that Christmas splurging, because on Christmas I'd make every kind of candy you could think of, and we'd get fruit and bananas and oranges and apples and everything we could think of for Christmas. But I tell you, raising a family is quite a deal, especially when it was on me a lot, because Grandpa was gone a lot. Oh, I was going to tell you that time that Lee, he went into the Woolworths at noon one time with somebody that was a thief. And this guy picked up something into Woolworths, and they arrested him. And lo and behold, Lee was with him, and he was counted accomplice. So Grandpa and I had to go down to the court, to the where would it have been? The courthouse.
Uh-huh. Courthouse.
Yeah, or wherever it was. I know we went, and they had a hearing. Believe it or not, was going to put our Lee, say that he stole, and Lee said, Mom, I never took nothing, ever. Ever did I take anything. And I said, well, don't you ever think that they're going to get you, because they're not.
And so Grandpa was home, and boy, he went right along. And we sat there, and we heard their... And finally, this boy admitted that Dan didn't... that Lee didn't take anything. That he didn't take anything.
Did you ever have to whip any of them?
That record went against him. The only time I ever give any one of them a licking, and I'll, to this day I regret it, Mike, the only one time I ever give anyone a licking, Edwin. We lived on the Fort Dodge Road, and we had a, we took turns taking our car to get the kids from school, and Edwin decided he didn't want to come home with them, and he was going to walk, but his idea was, there was an old dairy down the street from us, quite a little ways, and he wanted to watch them milk, have, you know, put those milking things on the cow's tits, and so they could watch them milk, and it was interesting. But anyway, Grandpa come home, and he wouldn't get home till pretty dark. And I'd worry myself to death. I just didn't know what happened to Edwin. And finally, here he'd come poking home. And so the Grandpa told him, he said, "Now listen, I don't want you stopping there anymore." He said, "They've got all kinds of characters there working that are not fit for little boys to be around. And that's no place for you, and I don't want you to be there anymore. Now understand?" He said, "I want you to come on home with when they pick up the other kids, you get right in the car and come on home." Well, Ed ignored him. And he didn't do it. Gee, I've got a hangnail there. Well, anyway, he didn't do it. And so we didn't know what on earth to do. And so Grandpa said, "Well, there's only one thing to do." He said, if he pulls that trick again, you're going to have to give him a licking. "Well, because I'm not home. And you're going to have to give him a licking. That's all there is to it, because we're not going to stand for it." He told him he's going to get a licking. And he said, "And I want you to whip him until it really hurts. Because if you don't, he'll do it again. But," said, "you've got to whip him until it really hurts." And Grandpa was gone. Here come Edwin in the dark. So he walked in, and he knew absolutely that he wasn't supposed to do that. And I never said a word. And he ate his supper. Everybody jived along till he went to bed. And when he went to bed, then I had the switch. And I walked in, and I said, "Edwin, I've got to give you a licking for this. Because you won't mind. We've tried everything in the world. And here you come in every night at dark, and your dad told you that he didn't want you to do that, and you just keep doing it anyway, so I'm going to have to give you a licking." And I started in, and I whipped him. And Mike, to this day, I wish I had known. That switch hurt him, that switch, you know. Hurt his little legs, I hit his legs. Well, he was a pretty good sized boy, though. He was about 12, probably then. About 12. And I switched his legs, switched his bottom, his legs. That's all that we're getting, his legs and his bottom. And he said, "Oh, Mom, I'll never do it again." And he started crying. He said, "I'll never do it again." He said, "Please don't hit me anymore. I won't do it again." And I cried. I cried just as hard as he did. We both cried. And he said, "I promise you, Mom, I'll never do that again." And he never did. Edwin never did. But I wish I had him. There ought to be another way. But he just wouldn't listen. He just wouldn't listen. And see, Grandpa said he didn't want him there anymore, and he meant it, every word of it. And he just wouldn't pay attention.
When was the first time you got electricity? I mean, lights. You know, the lights that you could just switch on without having to use wood.
Sure. I remember that plainly. Couldn't hardly believe it. That was before I was married, though. But my father, he had the electricity put in, and see, always before we just had lamps.
What year was that?
Goodness, I must have been at least 18, I believe, before we ever had electricity. And so he had the electricity put in because it was right there. It didn't cost him much to have it put in. So he just had one light bulb in each, you know, hanging in each room, just one light. And we weren't allowed to only just burn one light at a time, but we couldn't believe it. Switch on, and there was the light. And so then here come the vacuum man, selling vacuum cleaners. And he come in and he said, now this sweeps your rug. This sweeps your rug. And we couldn't believe it. Sweeps your rug? You mean you can take a vacuum cleaner and clean the floor with electricity? And he cleaned our rug, Mike, in the dining room, and then in the parlor. He went in and cleaned it in the parlor and showed us how much dirt he got out of it. And we thought we had our rugs nice and clean, you know. And, oh, Mom and I wanted that vacuum cleaner. That would have been that saved us more work than anything. And Paul watched the meter go around as he run the vacuum. He said, no, electricity costs too much, and he wouldn't get it for us. So after I got married, that's one of the first things we bought was a vacuum cleaner.
When was the first time you rode in a car?
Oh, rode in a car? Mm-hmm. That, they had an old case. A great big case. Some guy out in the country. I was just a little tiny girl then, and they had this big old car, and they were giving rides to people, and the neighbors would gather, and I think it cost so much for a family. I think he let each family ride for 50 cents, I believe, or just 1 mile back. And we couldn't believe it. No horses on, and there it went. And that was, I remember that. First car I ever rode in. And I was just a little old tiny girl. So you see, I was back in Pioneer, wasn't I?
Uh-huh.
Really.
Did they have indoor toilets then?
I never sat in an indoor toilet in my whole life until after I was married, and I never took a bath in the bathtub with the water coming down until after I was married. But we went to visit some folks in town, and Ernest was always a little stinker. And he got away from Mom in that we'd have to sit in the parlor, you know, and sit real stiff, Mom, if you'd go to visit somebody. And you didn't dare, the kids didn't dare to move. You had to sit just like statues. And Ernest got away some way or other and went in and found their toilet, their bathroom toilet, and went to the toilet, and he flushed that toilet some way or other. And oh boy, whoever was visiting, she just had a fit. Said, oh, you can't do that because you'll run our water bill up. And Ernest sat on that toilet, but we never had a toilet. But anyway, after Grandpa and I was married, why, see, that we had a great big tub in the kitchen. Great big tub. Of course, that was used also for washing. You know, we washed the clothes and everything, but also, it was used for taking a bath. And you'd heat your water on the old big old cook stove. And take the boiler and heat the water on the cook stove and then pour it down into the tub, you know, and we'd take baths. And so, of course, I'd taken a bath the day of our wedding. But Grandpa had a few dollars, and I didn't know it, but he was practically broke. But anyway, we took our honeymoon. He got a free pass for me, you see, to Wichita. And we spent our honeymoon at Wichita. And so there was that great big tub. And he went and filled it full of water. And he says, now you get in and take a good bath. And he always did say afterwards that I turned several shades whiter.
What, did you have to use outdoor tubs?
Oh, no. Oh, you mean after we got home? Sure. my goodness, we had a tub ourselves there in that little house, and we took our baths in the kitchen. But I want to tell you, we kept clean. The only thing I can remember, though, they were talking about that in church, and I can remember that the men's feet, it seemed to me like their feet stunk. Men's feet.
Didn't they wear shoes?
Yeah. Seemed like when they take their shoes off, their feet would stink. I can remember that when I was growing up. It seemed to me like all men had stinky feet. But, you know, there was I've thought about an old uncle. It's some relation of ours, and I don't know who he was. He'd come to visit us, and he'd sit in a chair, and he'd sit there in that chair and smoke a pipe. And he'd sit there and make rings, smoke rings. I thought that was the most beautiful thing I ever heard tell of. And he just seemed so contented. He'd sit there hour after hour making those smoke rings, smoking with that old pipe. And I always thought, boy, if I ever get married, I want to get a man that knows how to make those smoke rings with that tobacco. But see, they used to use a pipe. You used to smoke a pipe. Those cigarettes, they come in, I believe they came in after we were married. And I think the men rolled their own. They had packages of cigarette papers, and then they'd make their own cigarette with the tobacco. They'd make their own cigarettes. I don't. That's when they started getting away from their pipe.
When did they start making spring beds, that you know, like we have now?
Uh-huh.
Did they used to just have feather beds or what?
Oh, yeah, feather beds.
Duck feathers or what? Chicken feathers?
Yeah, but we never did have a feather bed.
What'd you
but
have?
But that's one of the first things that we bought, too, was a mattress. We bought a new mattress, and when I think about it, I tell you, I must have been a nut. But anyway, first time we moved, see, I didn't know we was going to just be like bums and move around from pillar to post. But first time we moved, we lived there with the folks for a while. And first thing we did was buy a new mattress because Grandpa said, "My land, that mattress is too hard to sleep on." So he got him a nice mattress. And so when we had to move, I said, "Well, I'm not going to leave unless I take this mattress." So he goes down and gets gunny sacks, Grandpa, clean gunny sacks, and sews them together himself and makes a cover for the mattress. And then ships them along wherever we get. And that was the first time, first place we went. Why, we walked in, he rented the apartment. And I said, "Well, we won't need your mattress. You can just take it off." "My mattress? No, I'm not sleeping on somebody else's mattress. You'll have to take that." "Well, all right." So I took the mattress and brought my new mattress. And we took that around just like a suitcase. And Grandpa took it to please me. I tell you, when I stopped to think about it, he sure had his hands full. But anyway, why, we survived. And we stuck out together. Because why? Because we loved each other.
When did you start teaching school?
Oh, I taught school before while he was in that Navy. But boy, when he came home, when we got married, he wouldn't let me ever work again. He would.
Where was the school you taught at?
Huh?
What school?
Out in the country. Out
McKinley?
McKinley? Roselle. I had to go 4 miles straight west, right straight west down the road, and then you turn, after you got 4 miles out, then you turn to the left, and there was the little schoolhouse. And boy, they were a bunch of outlaws that I taught. Imagine, there I was, 18 years old, but I knew how to handle them. I had come from a bunch of brothers of little outlaws, you might say. And believe me, I took over, and when I finally give it up, and they said, "Oh, you're the first one that we've had discipline. And they listen to you, we want you to stay." But they tried every scheme in the book to try to pull their dirty tricks. They did, but I was on to them all every time. And the first thing, why, the one that left the school was become superintendent, county superintendent. Now, she said, Eva, what you're going to have to watch out for, first thing, now this Bailey, that was his name, had two boys. And these boys were bigger, taller than me. They were great, big, tall guys. And said, now the first thing, they'll bring you a problem to work. Now, if you can work that problem, then you're in. But if you can't, then they'll think you're done and they won't let you stay. Well, I said, I'm not worried about that, arithmetic, see. So sure enough, I don't think I'd been there over a week or two, and here they come. But their father had tried to work this, and he couldn't get it. And he was supposed to be a college man anyways, even pulling my leg, and said, we'd like to see if you can work this problem. And I said, well, okay. I said, you go on out for recess and play, and I'll work it while you're out. And boy, I was shaking in my boots. I thought, I don't know whether I can work this or not. But I worked it, and when it came in, I had worked it out. And so I said, you can copy it down now and take it to your father. And boy, when I had did that, I was sure in. I was a smart person. But anyway, the boys decided. They decided what they were going to build a cave. And it was supposed to be a place for them, a cave, you know. So they worked like beavers, and they brought their spades, and they started shoveling in, making, a dugout, seed tunnel down, and dugout. Boy, they worked like little beavers. And so I said, well, it was all right for the boys, but no, what they had in mind, they was going to have the girls down there, see. That's what they worked for, to get the girls, see. Down in the cave, see, it was kind of an outlaw place there. And I had my eyes around them, and I said, oh, just a moment here. No girls go down there. You girls have to be where I can take care of you and where I can see what's going on. Nope, you can't go down in that cellar, in that cave. And so I watched, and they tried to sneak in. I said, okay, you take your shovels and shovel that, fill that in. No more cellar. I made them fill it in. Really? Because they wouldn't pay attention, see. In those days, you had to make a mind. That's all there stood. If you didn't have discipline, you were sunk. But I had discipline. Don't think I didn't. But I'd come home, and then Mom would have piles of work for me to do, washing and everything. She didn't even use her head at all. I was paying all of their groceries and everything, buying their grocery, everything, and Mom would expect me to come home and do the washing and everything, you know, just work my head off. It was too much. I just couldn't do it. So I finally quit. I come home every night with a headache, and so I quit teaching. Then what made me quit, I took the post office examinations for the post office. Mm-hmm. And I was second, and they let me go in to work in the window. I worked up in the window, you know, letters and sold stamps and stuff. And so I give up teaching and went into the post office. And I worked in the post office then until the men started coming home after the war. And then they took over, and they wanted to send me out in California then, and I wouldn't go. Because I was waiting for
what kind of wages did they give you?
Oh, good. I got what top wages. But I was waiting for Grandpa, and I just would not. He told me he didn't want me to leave home while he was gone.
When did he go to the Navy? What year?
Mm-hmm.
When did he go to the Navy?
He went to the Navy, and he got out of the Navy in 1918. Or he went in 1918. He enlisted in 1918 and got out in 1920. And he said, now, just as soon as I come from the Navy, then we're going to get married. And so he had $2,000 saved, and he was going to put his severance pay, which was $500 more, on towards the wedding. Well, when he got home, in a few weeks, he went and enlisted on the Santa Fe. Found out they were hiring firemen, so he hired out as fireman. And you know what? That little stinker lost everything. Lost that $2,500 between July, and we were married in November. He lost everything.
How'd he do it?
Gambling. Thieves. Sure. Gambling. Lost it all. And so, he'd come about, I think it was about October, he'd come out, and he said, well, he said, I wanted to have a little money, but I'm broke, so I don't have anything to get married to. I said, well, if that's the case, then I guess we just, well, call it quits. And he said, oh, no, I'm not giving you up. I'm not giving you up. He said, when do you want to get married? And I thought, well, I said, well, we'll get married Thanksgiving. I said, okay, Thanksgiving it is. And that little stinker didn't have enough hardly to take a two-day trip to Wichita. He was that near broke. And there he was getting good wages on the Santa Fe because he was making about $500 a month on the Santa Fe. But he was up there gambling with those, you know, those fricks up here in Newton. They had a hangout, and there's where he was staying, you see, and he gambled. So when we got married, he said, well, he took the Kinsley job, and we was living there with the folks. He's brought his first check. I never will forget to get the first check in. Boy, it was a big check. He was really working then. Oh, I don't know how much it was. It was just for 2 weeks, and I couldn't hardly believe it. I think it was about $500. And he said, now this I want is yours. And you just give me enough to live on. And he said, you're going to take care of the money. Because I just simply can't hold on to him. He said, I just can't. He just couldn't. I wonder why. It just took him for a cleaner. And he said, you give me enough to live on, and so I can have a little money at the other end to eat on, and you have the rest. So I just took it down to the bank, put it away for the bank. And that was in, right, you know, we was married November the 26th. And so along in March, well, here he come. And he said, I've lost my job. He said, I'm going to beat up the engineer. The old Dutch Reed, he was a Dutchman. And he got mad at him. And Grandpa was going to beat him up. And he said, I'm going to beat you up. And he never touched him. He never even touched him. And old Dutch Reed jumped off the engine and went and reported him and took Grandpa just like that, insubordination. And he came to the front porch and he said, I'm sorry, I can't come in. I've lost my job. He said, I was fighting. He said, I was going to beat up an engineer, but he said, I never touched him. But he said, I did, but he said, I never touched him. But I really wanted to beat him up, he said. But he said, I can't come in because I don't have a red cent. And he said, I will not swear.
I'm Shelley Schlender. This concludes part one of Michael Turner's recordings of Grandma Turner, which he did on July 10, 1979. Part two is on the second CD, and on that recording you'll hear more about how, after losing his money gambling, losing his job, and fearing that he'd also lost his chance with Grandma, he still came out ahead, thanks to a surprise that she had waiting.